Orville Freestone Jr., Sunday PM, May 9th, 2010.
Turn to the 125th Psalm. This begins the second section of this 15 Psalm series. And as one commentator noted, and I think it's relevant, the first five Psalms are an expression of anticipation. The next five Psalms are Psalms of realization. The psalmist has, the pilgrim has actually reached Jerusalem. He's gone into the temple and he's worshiped, and now he is giving observations of the city while he's there, realizing its importance to him. These psalms were written for the pilgrims that came to the three great festivals of Israel, or at other times if they would come, but especially on these three great times of Passover, of Pentecost, and Tabernacles. And he didn't come for a day. He came to camp out or to board with someone, because Passover and unleavened bread lasted for 8 days. And Tabernacles lasted for 8 days. And before Tabernacles, there was the High Holy Day of Atonement. And if he took in that too, that was a 2 full weeks. So the pilgrim would spend some time in Jerusalem. Let's read it together. Those who trust in the Lord are like Mount Zion, which cannot be moved, but abides forever. As the mountains surround Jerusalem, so the Lord surrounds his people from this time forth and forevermore. For the scepter of wickedness shall not rest on the land allotted to the righteous, lest the righteous stretch out their hands and do wrong. Do good, O Lord, to those who are good, and to those who are upright in their hearts. But those who turn aside to their crooked ways, the Lord will lead away with evildoers. Peace beyond Jerusalem. So far, each of these short psalms can be summed up in a single word. Psalm 120 can be summed up in the word distress. In my distress, I called unto the Lord. Woe is me, for I live in Meshech. Psalm 121, the word is assurance. He will not let your foot be moved. He who keeps you will not slumber. Behold, he who keeps Israel will neither slumber nor sleep. In Psalm 122, it is peace. I was glad when they said unto me, let us go into the house of the Lord. Pray for the peace of Jerusalem. And Psalm 123, it's mercy. Have mercy on us, O Lord. Have mercy upon us. And Psalm 124, it is deliverance. If it had not been the Lord was on our side, then the flood would have swept over us and swept us away. But we have escaped like a bird from the snare of the fowler. And in our psalm for tonight, the word is security. The security of God's people. Jerusalem is only, Mount Zion is only one of the hilltops in the mountains of Judea. in the area of Jerusalem. There are mountains all around it, the Mount of Olives, various other mountains surrounding the city, but not surrounding it in the way that, say, the mountains close in some of our mountain towns, close in, but they're standing, as one traveler described it, as sentinels standing around about Mount Zion on three sides, and the fourth side gradually lowers towards where Bethlehem is, and then the wadis surrounding Jerusalem descend to the Dead Sea. But it is a place of security. It was a place of security for the Canaanites, so much so that they thought they could never be taken. The first we read of Mount Zion, or the word Zion, or Zion in Hebrew, is in the 5th chapter of 2 Samuel. And the king, David, and his men went to Jerusalem, giving it by the name that they would call it, against the Jebusites, the inhabitants of the land, who said to David, "You will not come in here, but the blind and the lame will ward you off," thinking David cannot come here. Nevertheless, David took the stronghold of Zion. That's the first mention of the word Zion in the Bible, a name David gave to the place, that is, the city of David. And David said on that day, "Whosoever would strike the Jebusites, let him get up the water shaft to attack the lame and the blind, and he who are hated of David's soul. Therefore it is said, the blind and the lame shall not come into the house." And David lived in the stronghold. Some claim that the word Zion, or Zion in Hebrew, means stronghold, but the etymology is not all that clear, and called it the city of David. And David built a city all around from the millow inward. And David became greater and greater, for the Lord, the God of hosts, was with him. The city of David is the ridge of Zion, which was first the fortification of Zion. Later, Solomon built the temple on the hill that overlooks Zion, the top of the rock, which before was known at least to the Israelites as Moriah, and where Abraham had offered Isaac. So the word Zion first was to the city of David, the stronghold, the fortress, where David built his palace. Later it came to include the temple area, and then the whole city, walled city of Jerusalem, is called Zion. And then the outlying areas, the mountains that surrounded it, were a part of Zion. And then it came to be a representative of the whole land of Israel, and even the nation of Israel. Those who trust in the Lord are like Mount Zion, which cannot be removed, but abides forever. David felt secure in Zion. He built walls around it, built his palace there. However, any place can be taken by an attacker. And eventually Mount Zion was taken by the Babylonians. but it was a place of security, and it was used by the psalmist here to show how secure are those who put their trust not in the fortification of Zion, but in the God of Zion, who put their trust in the Lord. As the mountains surround Jerusalem, so the Lord surrounds his people from this time forth and forevermore. Did you ever feel surrounded by the Lord's presence? One of the other Psalms, Psalm 34, expresses a similar thought. The angel of the Lord encamps around those who fear him and delivers him. So this has long been regarded as a psalm telling how secure are the people who put their trust in the Lord. Those who trust in the Lord are like Mount Zion, which cannot be moved, but abides forever. As the mountains surround Jerusalem, so the Lord surrounds his people from this time forth and forever. But we know that for over 2 millennia, the Jewish people have been banned from Mount Zion, at least from the temple part of it, and they still are. For the Muslims still control the Temple Mount in Jerusalem. The Jews could take it. They could very easily take it. But they are afraid of the consequences it would cause throughout the entire Middle East and perhaps unite a greater war than they could handle it. And then the psalmist must have been living in a time when remembering the time when they were banned from Mount Zion, where he says, "For the scepter of wickedness shall not rest," that is, shall not endure or shall not stay on the land allotted to the righteous, lest the righteous stretch out their hands to do wrong. Probably this psalm was written after the time of return from the captivity, during the Persian rule, because even though they were permitted to return and rebuild the temple and the city, Judah was still not an independent people. They were still vassals to the Persian king. So the psalmist here says, the scepter of wickedness. The scepter is always the symbol of dominion, of ruling. That's why kings, and especially in our time, the British monarch, on being enthroned, is handed a scepter of the kingdom and the orb representing the world. The scepter represents the government. For the government of wickedness, called the government of wickedness because it was of the Gentiles who were idolaters, shall not rest on the allotted land of the righteous, intimating that at that time, so far as the overlord is concerned, it did. Lest the righteous stretch out their hands to do wrong. And this is a very strange statement to me. The righteous are expected to retain their faith, even under persecution. And indeed, the saints of Israel did, and the saints of the church had. Of course, there were many who didn't, who fell by the wayside. I've been reading something of church history about the time of the fall of Rome, when the Vandals were raging over the churches of North Africa, and even before that, when the Roman emperor was persecuting the Christians, that some of the believers would lapse their faith, and they would swear allegiance to the emperor as Lord. And then it was a problem with the churches later when the persecutions eased. Do we receive them back into fellowship or do we not? And this was one of the big controversies among the post-apostolic fathers among the churches. But here he said, lest the righteous stretch out their hands to do wrong. But then there is that passage in Matthew where Jesus is teaching in Matthew 6:13, where he said, forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors, and lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from the evil man. So I guess we should all of us realize that we are weak, that there's none of us that can not fall. And so this is what the psalmist was praying, lest the scepter of wickedness shall not rest on the land allotted to the righteous, lest the righteous stretch out their hands to do wrong. Do good, O Lord, to those who are good, and to those who are upright in their hearts. But to those who turn aside to their crooked ways, the Lord will lead away with evildoers. So here the psalmist was realizing that not all Israelites were people of faith. Not all Israelites could be counted among the good. And indeed, the apostle confirms this in his day in Romans 9:6, where he writes, but it is not as though the word of God has failed, for not all who are descended from Israel belong to Israel, and not all are children of Abraham, because they are his offspring, but through Isaac, the man of faith, shall your offspring be named. This means that it is not the children of the flesh who are the children of God, but the children of promise are counted as offspring. So the psalmist realized in his day that not every Israelite was a person of faith. Do good, O Lord, to those who are good, and those who are upright in their hearts. But those who turn aside to their crooked ways, the Lord will lead away with evildoers. Peace be upon Israel. And this is a short psalm, but it is a psalm to ponder, and especially to ponder all of these psalms in succession. One of the striking things to me, it is in Psalm 120, in my distress, I called upon the Lord. Psalm 121, I lift up my eyes to the hills. In Psalm 122, I was glad when they said unto me. Psalm 123, to you I lift up my eyes, O you who are enthroned in the heavens. But beginning with Psalm 124, we read, if it had not been the Lord who was on our side, let Israel now say. And it ends with, our help is in the name of the Lord. And then in Psalm 125, those who trust in the Lord are like Mount Zion. And in the final phrase there, peace be on Israel. Do you see a gradual increase in perception of the psalmist as we go from psalm to psalm? Each psalm seems to be, pardon the pun, a degree higher than the last. And it is important for us to realize that the great God notices me in particular. That's mind-boggling. And to realize Christ died for me, and that I am important to Him, that He hears my prayer. But it is even more important that we realize God cares about all of His people. He cares about us corporately, and we should care about each other corporately as a congregation or as a part of the great Christian church. We should not be just taken up with our own group or our own congregation, but we should remember our fellow believers throughout the world. Juanita has been reading to a little lady who is a Coptic Egyptian. She came from Cairo, and she asked her, pray for my people in Cairo. They are undergoing great persecution today. And that was in the news too, that the Muslims were raging through the Christian quarter of Cairo, bursting into houses and slitting people's throats and burning down their houses. We have brothers and sisters throughout this world who are undergoing tribulation that we have never experienced ourselves. So we should broaden our view as the psalmist here did, from me to Israel, from us to all of those who call upon the name of the Lord throughout the world. Some of you have read General Sada's book on the Christians in Iraq. He was an Air Force general in Iraq before the fall of Saddam. And he says that persecution has been the daily experience of the believers in Iraq, and some of them are evangelical believers, a great number of them are, for centuries. Many Christians have never known the peace and security that we've known in this country. So as the psalmist would say, peace be upon Israel, perhaps we should pray for the worldwide church, for all of those who are our fellow believers.